an arcade, El Fasfous, has been finally freed. The Israeli authorities released El Fasfous from the Israeli hospital of Barzilai, where he was held for subsequent worsening of his health condition because of his hunger strike. He arrived first at his hometown Doura village in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil. Then he headed to the grave of later President Yasser Arafat in Ramallah. He sent a message to the other prisoners to remain steadfast, reminding them that gaining rights and liberty are only achieved through fighting.
As I did it, my brothers who are on hunger strike will do it. It was not an easy experience at all. Me and the other prisoners went through difficult days and circumstances. We had been beaten, oppressed, and held in solitary confinement, and had been transferred frequently from one prison to another.
Israel arrested El Fasfous in October 2020, and it was not his first detention. He was arrested several times in the past, but this time he was held under administrative detention without charge or trial. Last month, the Israeli prison authorities decided to end his administrative detention and release him. The Commission of Detainees and Ex-Detainees Affairs has appraised El Fasfous' victory and appraised his encouragement, describing it as defeating the occupation's authorities, and it hoped that the remaining hunger-striking prisoners, on top of them Hisham Abu Hawash, who has been protesting for 111 days, would also achieve victory.
It's a victory for El Fasfous and for the prisoners' movement, as well as for all of us. We praise El Fasfous's stance. He refused to retreat despite his deteriorating health condition and bravely insisted on his demand.
Administrative detention involves no indictment, no revelation of confidential evidence, and no trial or judgment of the accusations against the prisoner, as Israel holds over 4,500 Palestinian prisoners. Hundreds of them are languishing behind bars without charge or trial under the illegal so-called administrative detention. Qaid El Fasfous is free today after achieving a tremendous victory following 131 days of his hunger strike. His battle definitely gives other Palestinian prisoners held under Israel's administrative detention a glimmer of hope to go on with their actions and their fight for justice. Mona Qandil, Occupy Ramallah.
If the yellow vests march, but the mainstream media doesn't cover it, does it have an effect? In the age of social media, the answer seems to be an unequivocal yes, perhaps much to the anger of so-called legacy media. Since the Yellow Vest started their season 2, domestic media has been almost completely absent. But for the 8th consecutive Saturday, they marched nationwide, shut down toll booths, and occupied roundabouts. The Yellow Vests say they don't expect fair treatment from France's private media. Less than 10 billionaires control 90% of all the nation's media, with strict control over an editorial policy which many say is often right-wing.
Starting in June 2019, France's mainstream media simply stopped reporting on the Yellow Vests. However, they continued to march nationwide in major numbers through the two-month general strike that winter and until March 2020, when the coronavirus forced a ban on all public demonstrations.
In Paris, one of the Yellow Vest demonstrations gathered outside of government-owned Radio France's headquarters to denounce the failure of public media journalists to provide fair coverage of the nation's biggest social movement in decades.
We pay our taxes to support public media and we pay to help privately owned media as well, but they both relay the exact same opinions and both exclude and they both slander any dissenting voices. What we're asking for is that the diversity of opinions be respected and we're telling these journalists to stop their censorship and propaganda.
The ever-increasing concentration of French media ownership has forced the government to act. This week, they quietly authorized a commission to investigate the issue, with results due in early 2022. The conclusions will likely have a lot to say about the true freedom of the French press during the age of Western corporate domination. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
The European Commission's Joint Research Centre says 50 million people in the EU are suffering the effects of so-called energy poverty. It means households are having to prioritise food over heat. EU energy ministers have been meeting in Brussels to assess the crisis.
Since we launched our communication and toolbox on energy prices, 20 member states have taken or announced measures to mitigate the impact on their people and businesses, in particular the most vulnerable.
But that means almost a third of EU governments have not taken any action to protect citizens. Gas and electricity prices are out of control. Civil society organizations are forecasting that energy poverty will be hitting 80 million people in the EU before winter is over. The EU's dysfunctional energy market is currently in a state of flux. The bloc is heavily dependent on Russia's gas. The European Commission confirms Moscow is fulfilling all of its supply contracts. However, energy storage is a problem in the EU. Supplies were depleted last winter due to unusually cold weather. Then there was huge demand when EU nations began lifting COVID-19 restrictions. Energy experts say the EU could benefit if it improved relations with Russia. The 27-country bloc could also push back against US foreign policy so that new supply chains could be utilised, for example, with respect to Iran, which has enormous energy reserves. EU leaders are divided over how to deal with the crisis, but it's clear there are no quick fixes. The matter will be high on their agenda when they meet here in just under 2 weeks' time for a summit on the 16th of December. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Following a meeting with the signatories of the nuclear agreement, known as the JCPOA, Iran calls for a reasonable, documented and rational response to its proposals for the removal of US sanctions and Iran's return to full compliance. Deputy Foreign Minister and lead negotiator Ali Bagheri-Kani said Britain, France and Germany were not happy with some of Iran's proposals.
They had no complaint about these proposals being irrelevant, but they say they are not consistent with our viewpoints, and I told them this is natural. We are not supposed to express ideas that are in line with your viewpoints. We take our own interests and policies into consideration. The important point is that they are based on principles that all sides agree on. No European side claims that Iran's proposals lack legal basis.
A diplomatic source close to the Iranian negotiating team said the country's proposed drafts were in complete conformity with the JCPOA, adding it was regrettable that some European sides were attempting to dictate their own demands round the negotiating table while failing to acknowledge that a revival of the deal requires compliance by all sides.
I think the current administration, what it is saying is that the JCPOA, the nuclear deal, good or bad, is something that Iran's accepted, and we will commit ourselves to it. However, we will not allow the other side to retain sanctions, maximum pressure sanctions, and then expect us to go back to 2015. That simply won't happen.
EU coordinator Enrico Mora said there were substantial challenges ahead, while time to reach an agreement was not unlimited. While Iran is calling for a rational and documented response to its proposals, European diplomats are expressing concern and scepticism. The Vienna talks are set to resume next week when it may become more clear whether the gaps can be bridged. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
The story of how Palestine was wrenched from the indigenous people lives on. It is passed down from chest to chest, from generation to generation. Even Palestinians born outside their homeland and raised in refugee camps or elsewhere carry the story with them. Attendees at this art exhibition say living in the UK, it's even more important to show up.
I think here in Britain, given Britain's role in creating the situation for Palestinian people and its ongoing support for the Israeli government and allowing it to carry out its apartheid policies, we have a special duty here to raise awareness about the situation, to fight our government when it supplies weapons to the Israeli government and gives it its support.
I support the struggle completely. And I love the forthright strength, the samud of the Palestinian people is inspiration to anybody. Anybody with any trouble, go to Palestine and see what trouble really is.
The elderly carry the keys to their demolished houses round their necks, and the new generation educate their children on the 1948 land grab that forced out hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. This art exhibition in London is part of their ongoing struggle to raise the flag for Palestine.
I'm here today to celebrate our Palestinian culture, our amazing Palestinian artists. You know, our people are talented, clearly, and it's so nice to see them use their talents to preserve our culture.
This exhibition is called Visualizing Return. It launched on the anniversary of UN Resolution 194, which calls for the immediate return of all Palestinian refugees. Visualizing Return hopes to emphasize the necessity of granting Palestinian refugees this long overdue human right.
Interestingly enough, one of the easiest citizenships to acquire is Israeli citizenship. All you have to do is to prove that you have a Jewish grandparent or a Jewish spouse. But there is a Palestinian diaspora 6 million strong, and they are not allowed to return to their homeland.
The Israeli regime wants to maintain a Jewish majority. If the diaspora were allowed to return, they would by far outnumber the Jewish population. So 73 years into occupation, the demographic war rages on. Exiled Palestinians are raising awareness, but on the front line of this struggle are the men, women and children holed up in the largest open-air prison in the world, the Gaza Strip. Bianca Rahimi, London.
In its latest annual report, Italy's Center for Social Studies and Policies, CENSIS, has found that some 2 million Italian families were in absolute poverty in 2020, a rise of more than 100% on 2010. This is due to the outbreak of COVID-19 that has accentuated a sense of vulnerability in the country. CENSIS report shows that over 40% of Italians feel insecure, while students suffer increasing levels of depression, anxiety, and existential angst.
The COVID-19 pandemic has made more workers vulnerable to pay discrimination, loss of income, and exploitative practices. The socioeconomic malaise, which was already worrying before the pandemic, is today very much widespread to all layers of the population.
The company we work for refuses to meet us to discuss the terms of our contract as the pandemic is completely changing the way we work. This is unacceptable.
Over the past months, hundreds of large and smaller protests have been staged across Italy with workers from both the public and private sectors expressing deep concern over the deteriorating rights situation. On Friday in Rome, employees from Sogei, the information and communication technology company of the Ministry of the Economy and Finance, held a demonstration demanding to negotiate new smart working guidelines with the employer. Also on Friday, farmers from an area north of Naples staged a protest near the Agriculture Ministry calling the government for financial assistance. Hundreds of small farming companies have gone bankrupt as the large-scale retail trade has preempted small entrepreneurs.
We haven't been allowed to be here in big numbers due to the COVID restrictions. The government must help us. We are asked to observe the most stringent food regulations when it comes to our products, but fruit and vegetables full of pesticides coming from Morocco and other countries are let in without controls. Furthermore, we haven't received a penny from the EU aid funds to farmers. When the money lands into the regional government's account, it simply disappears.
On Friday, Rome and Milan were both affected by a public transport four-hour strike called by the General Union of Labour, UGL. The nationwide action was called by unionists against the obligation for workers to have the Green Pass, a certificate proving the holder has been vaccinated, tested negative, or recovered from COVID-19. Max Civili, Rome.
COVID.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Come on. It's time to get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
ایستگاه شهید بهشتی مسافرین گرامی خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Good morning, Mom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The spotlight.
Israeli violations of occupied Palestinian territories is a phenomenon that occurs almost daily, but the violations have been so incessant that it looks like the world has become numb to it. In the latest aggression, Israeli forces fatally shot a Palestinian man at a checkpoint. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why Israel continues to get away with it, and whether the U.S. support for Israeli aggression is a reason for Israel's continued violation of international law and the crimes that it is committing.
Palestinians and rights group condemned Jerusalem execution. OHCHR shocked by Israel's killing of Palestinian man in Jerusalem. Israeli forces raid house of Palestinian man shot dead over alleged attack. Israeli forces attack Palestinian farmers and fishermen in besieged Gaza. These are some of the headlines in the past few days that show not a day goes by in the occupied territories without the Israeli regime's atrocities against Palestinians amid a deafening silence of the United Nations and other international bodies. In the latest aggression, Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian man point-blank at a checkpoint near the occupied West Bank city of Tulkarm. The regime claims the Palestinian was gunned down after he rammed a vehicle into an Israeli guard. Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas, have hailed the attack against occupying forces. They say it represents the natural reaction of the Palestinian nation against Israeli crimes and the ongoing occupation. The fatal shooting was the second such incident in the past week. On Saturday, the Israeli forces killed a young Palestinian man in occupied Al-Quds, claiming he had tried to stab an officer after wounding a man. Israel often uses stabbing as a pretext to kill Palestinians at close range. The footage of the cold-blooded killing, which showed Israeli forces shooting the man at least twice while he was already lying on the ground, triggered widespread condemnation from Palestinian officials, the UN, and rights groups. The UN Human Rights Office said it was shocked by the incident.
Extrajudicial killings such as this are the consequences of the regular resort to lethal force by well-armed and well-protected Israeli military personnel against Palestinians, and the almost total lack of accountability for killings and injuries of Palestinians by Israeli forces.
Not even Palestinian children and teenagers are immune to Israeli brutality. Last month, the regime forces killed 14-year-old Amjad Abu Sultan in the West Bank city of Bethlehem. His body was seized by the regime and was not released to his family until days later. Israeli troops have on numerous occasions been caught on camera for the brutal killing of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, with the videos going viral and sparking international condemnation. However, the international community's inaction has emboldened the regime to press ahead with its extensive use of lethal force against Palestinians. Israel's atrocities are not limited to brutal killings of Palestinians. A UN report last month revealed that the number of Palestinian structures confiscated or demolished in the occupied territories has increased by 21% in 2021 compared to last year. Palestinians say the move is part of the regime's land grab policy aimed at paving the way for its settlement expansion. Israel has sped up its settlements construction in the occupied territories despite international condemnation. Last month, the regime approved thousands more settler units near Al-Quds in defiance of international law. Israel's policies have not only exposed the UN, but also the countries self-proclaiming as human rights defenders. On top sits the United States, that has voted some 50 UN Security Council resolutions critical of Israel in the past four decades, and actually gives a green light to the regime to fulfill its occupation agenda and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, we have Palestinian journalist, writer, and activist Khaled Barkat, who joins us from Vancouver. Also joining us, Palestinian scientist and author Mazin Kumsaya, who joins us from Bethlehem.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to welcome you both. Let me first start with you, if I may, Khaled Barkat. It's going to be a little bit lengthy, but I have to highlight it. It comes from a source by the name of PCHR, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. You may have heard of it. It comes out with weekly reports of what happens in the occupied territories. Week after week, these reports come out. This is this week, 25th of November to 1st of December. I'm going to give the short version because it would take too much time. Excessive use of force, 11 Palestinians shot and wounded, including six children, seven Palestinian fishermen arrested, two fishing boats confiscated, Israeli forces shooting reported against five fishing boats, 156 Israeli forces incursions, including in the occupied East Jerusalem, 80 civilians to have been injured. You have demolitions that have happened, two homes self-demolished, another demolished by the Israeli forces, and another order placed for 58 homes. It was denied. And then you have settlements, Israel announcing plans to build 2,000. 1 week, every week, you have similar type reports. So when you see this, what do you think? Because many parts of the world don't realize that this is happening on such a scale on a weekly basis.
Yes, these are Israeli crimes and atrocities that is covering in your report the West Bank and Gaza and what people, Palestinian people, have been facing, you know, on a daily basis. There is an international complicity here, and the United States is absolutely complicit in these crimes, because what they do is not just that they support Israel, but they also provide protection for Israel on an international scene. Let's remember that most of these killings are targeting Palestinian children and youth between the age of 14 and 23. And many times the Israeli crimes against people in Gaza go unseen, and also not to count what Israel does on a daily basis against Palestinians inside Israel in 1948 occupied territories. Now, let's remember also that even the Israeli representative in the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, who is a right extreme, minister, he used to be in charge of the Israeli internal policing and also on the prison authority. And he personally is involved in killing young Palestinians, and he dared to speak to the international community. And the UN is hosting basically a war criminal. Instead of arresting this criminal, they provide an international arena for him. These crimes one of the reasons that especially the one that it's caught in videos, that's what people see.
Sure.
Very similar to what the U.S. police do on a daily basis against black youth, but we only see the one that is recorded on a video. But these crimes happen on a daily basis.
Sure. Well, let's break this down a little bit here, and let me ask you a direct question, Mazen Kumsay, if I may. Noam Chomsky, I'm sure you've heard of him, intellectual and philosopher in a sense. He has said, without U.S. aid, Israel would not be killing, I'm quoting him, without U.S. aid, Israel would not be killing Palestinians en masse. What do you think?
Well, the U.S. government has mentioned Khaled is complicit. It's actually a partner in crime. I would go further to say that U.S. foreign policy and U.S. aid to Israel is guided, of course, by the Zionist lobby that's in Washington that pushes around the U.S., gets it involved in wars in the Middle East that cause trillions of dollars of taxpayers' money, and that's why the U.S. has a deficit and has a debt that's now reached over $23 trillion thanks to these endless wars. But the U.S. has been built basically on these wars, and in its history had only like 20 years of peace, when most of its history has been a history of either directly involved in war or supporting countries that regimes that engage in wars like Saudi Arabia and Yemen or Israel on Palestine. This is what they do. That's the nature of this U.S. regime, if I may use that word also, because that's what the nature of a colonial system is. And Israel is a daughter of a colonial system. It's a daughter of the British colonial system and then taken over, basically adopted by the American colonial system. Mm-hmm. So it behaves in a very similar way in terms of its genocidal policies in these countries, in developing countries.
Well, I need to also have your take on this, if I may, Khaled Barakat, the U.S. support. We know the U.S. supports Israel, but it supports it in a way that it's almost unconditional. It's just there no matter what Israel is doing. How responsible do you think the U.S. is for Israel to feel this impunity?
Well, just like what Dr. Mazen Kumsay said, I mean, Israel is basically an U.S. project to date. Since 1956, when the United States entered the region, inherited the old colonial system of Britain and France, basically they inherited the area with Israel as well. I mean, we know that U.S. involvement in supporting the Zionist movement is long before 1956, but in that year, especially the Suez Canal crisis and the United States entering the region with full force, and Israel became literally a U.S. project. Every crime Israel commits against the Palestinian people, the United States is responsible. Britain too are responsible, and we see that instead of apologizing and admitting their crimes against the Palestinian people of establishing this colonialist racist regime in Palestine, they are trying to criminalize the Palestinian resistance. We saw that in the U.S. We see this today in Britain. And this war against the Palestinian people and the resistance of the Palestinians is absolutely orchestrated in Washington and Tel Aviv. And I wanted to stress, on the issue of U.S. responsibility here, which means what the United States is also doing is trying to set an example that, crimes could be committed against Arabs in the region, not just Palestinians, but also in Syria, Lebanon, and elsewhere,
right,
without going, punished or any kind of accountability.
All right. I was very taken aback, if I may ask you this, Muslim from Saya about this critique that was leveled against the UN, and it came from a website by the name of UN Watch, which monitors UN actions against other entities and so forth. And it said, based on the findings, that the UN has condemned Israel in 3 resolutions, and this just happened in this, I guess, ruling that happened just days ago. Erases the Jewish connection to Judaism's holiest site, is how they worded it. And this is the December 1 report. The UN General Assembly, it said, adopted 3 resolutions targeting Israel. And it said it was part of the total 14 resolutions being adopted over the next month that target it, with only 5 on the rest of the world. And very angry at why the UN is zooming in on Israel. Well, it's ironic that it would come out and say that it's being targeted for the violations that it's conducting. Then doesn't that put into a question why the UN cites all these illegal actions, but yet nothing happens? And then you have Israel that says, why are you picking on me?
Yes, I mean, since 1948, 100,000 Palestinians have been killed. Over 800,000, 900,000 have been injured. Over 1 million have been imprisoned. And every single human rights organization in the world and the United Nations Human Rights Commissions, various human rights resolutions in the UN, have all, every single one of them, even Israeli human rights organizations like B'Tselem, have reported these violations, and everybody knows these violations are happening, but Israel gets out basically with impunity for these things, as pointed out earlier. Now, why is that? Because Israeli colonial interests intersect strongly with American hegemonic interests in the Middle East. And this is also precisely why, and I'd like us to take a few moments to think about the not just the negative aspects of what's happening from the U.S. and Israel, but the positive aspects of what the local people are doing. That is precisely why resistance is growing around the world to these activities of the U.S. and Israel. It's the same situation as happened in South Africa under apartheid. It was a galvanizing movement around the world with boycott, divestment, sanctions, and other actions to target the regime of South Africa under apartheid. And the reason we did that with South Africa, and the reason we're now doing it with Palestine, because in both situations, this apartheid colonialist regime exposed the hypocrisy of Western world, exposed the hypocrisy of speaking about human rights by, for example, the Biden administration, while at the same time pumping billions of dollars to support the regimes that are devastating human rights around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, Khaled Barakat, can't mention or can't have this program not mention the Gaza Strip and the Palestinians there. Looking at the siege that began in the year 2007, 2021 is almost drawing to an end. It's almost unbelievable the way that they are surviving, if I can even use that word, survive, because that's what's happening there. And this is, again, under the watchful eye or unwatchful eye of the international community, seeing the way that this siege is affecting the lives there, from a lack of medicine, lack of food, to the, you name it, to all the difficulties there. Why is it that this particular situation is not paid attention to the way that it should and the way that it deserves?
Well, I mean, the siege is a war crime, and it goes against all international law and accords. Everyone knows that. This siege placed by Israel and the Egyptian regime together, and we see that, and the world sees that. But at the same time, Gaza is being targeted because in Gaza there is a strong Palestinian resistance. And what they want is the head of the resistance. They want the weapons of the resistance, and they want to break the will and the resistance of the Palestinian people in Gaza. When we talk about resistance in Gaza, we are talking about workers, fishers, farmers, teachers, not just military resistance. And so this popular Palestinian will that is confronting Israel, that is organizing for return to their homes in which they were displaced from, met with besieging people, which is in a place they, you know, the largest prison in the world. You know, today even Hamas have said publicly that the Egyptian regime is not meeting their responsibilities. I mean, you know, when we talk about Egypt role, and Israel is the enemy of the Palestinian people, but the Egyptian regime, this fascist regime led by Sisi and these generals, are also placing a heavy, measures against Palestinians in Gaza.
Sure. Well, in conclusion, I'd like to get your thoughts here, if I may, Mazen Kamzaya, on Israel's so-called normalization of ties under what the U.S. Put forward through its former president, Donald Trump. How much legitimacy did that give Israel, not only in terms of Israel itself, but also for it to continue its violations and for the, Arab countries to look the other way?
Well, the normalization activities with this Zionist colonization started at the beginning of the Zionist colonization. There was always Arab leaders, including even, sadly to say, Palestinian leaders, who think that the best way to deal with the situation is to accept the status quo and accept the hegemony of the Zionist project in Palestine. And I would go even further by saying that Israel would not have lasted one day without this normalization activities by the Arab regimes. Israel is not very strong. It's only made strong by, number one, Western support, which we talked about, and number two, by the normalization activities and basically collusion of some Arab leaders. Sad to say also, even the Palestinian Authority here in where I am now in the West Bank is colluding with this and supporting Israel through security coordination. And even just a few days ago or a week ago, there were some Israelis entered Ramallah, settlers, and they were protected by the Palestinian security forces. So unfortunately, this is the reality that the people have to face. And as pointed out earlier, there is the positive reality of resistance that's still happening in all its forms.
Okay, very well. We're going to unfortunately have to end it there. It was great talking to you both, Palestinian journalist, writer, and activist Khaled Barakat. Thank you from Vancouver. And from Bethlehem, Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Kamzaya. Thank you for your comments. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. It was great having you on board. From Mikhail Tahwai, it's goodbye until next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
Dear listeners, today we're going to continue our discussion about Imam Khomeini's views on the armed forces. Please stay with us. The late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, writes in his testament, "In Iran, where this miracle of the age, the Islamic Revolution, was worked by the people, the committed armed forces and the pure and patriotic commanders had a significant share. And today, as Saddam's war that has been imposed by the order and support of America and other superpowers, has faced a political and military defeat by the invading Ba'athist army, and its powerful supporters and their lackeys, it is again the armed forces and the new law enforcement forces, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps and popular forces, who created this great honor in the fronts with the unsparing support of the nation. They made Iran proud, and the internal mischief and plots that had been mobilized by the puppets affiliated to the East and the West to overthrow the Islamic Republic were thwarted by the able hands of the younger generation of the Islamic Revolutionary Committees, the Basij Volunteer Forces, the police, with the help of the brave people. It is the same dear selfness, younger generation, who stay awake at night so that their families rest calmly. May God bless them." The founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, continues, "I recommend kindly to all armed forces, in the end of the life of this world, just as they have been loyal, to be firmly loyal to Islam, which is the only religion of independence and freedom, and Almighty God has invited all to the lofty human status with its light of guidance. It is Islam that rescues you, your country, and your nation from the strain of dependence and affiliation to the powers who do not want you, except for their slavery, and keep your dear country and nation backward and the consumption market and under the shameful oppression. Prefer noble human life, even with problems, to the shameful life of slavery of foreigners, even if it is with animal welfare." late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, writes further in his testament, "My brotherly recommendation in the final steps of my life to the armed forces generally is that, O dear ones, who love Islam and continue self-sacrifice in defense and all over the country with the love of meeting God, be vigilant and alert as the political players and the West-toxicated and East-toxicated professional politicians and stealthy, mysterious hands have focused the sharp weapon of treachery and crime from every side towards you, dear ones, more than any other group, and they want to exploit your dear ones who have made the revolution victorious and revived Islam with your sacrifices to topple the Islamic Republic. And they want to separate you from Islam, and they want you to separate from the nation, and they don't want you to serve the country, and they want to throw you in the lap of one of the two world-devouring powers, and they want to nullify your efforts and sacrifices by political deception, tricks, in the Islamic and national form." Imam Khomeini then refers to the backwardness of Iran, saying, "After this, much of artificial backwardness to the great industries of the foreign countries, our need is an undeniable reality. This does not mean that we should be dependent on one of the superpowers in the advanced sciences. The government and the army should make effort to send committed students to the countries which have great advanced industries, while they're not colonialists and exploiters, and they should refrain from sending the students to America and the Soviet Union and other countries which are in the direction of these two poles. Perhaps, God willing, one day will come that these two powers will come to their senses and march in the path of humanity and humanitarianism and respect other people's rights. Or, God willing, the downtrodden of the world and the vigilant nations and committed Muslims will put them in their places." The founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, writes further in his testament, "Know that as long as you extend your hand to others in advanced industries and spend your life in begging, the power of innovation and advancement in inventions would not flourish within you. And you saw clearly that in this short period after the economic sanctions, those who considered themselves unable to make anything and were disappointed of driving factories, put their thoughts into action and met many needs of the army and factories themselves. And this war, the economic sanction and expulsion of the foreign experts, were a divine gift which we were negligent of. Now, if the government and the army sanctioned the goods of the world devourers and increased their effort in the way of innovation, it is hoped that the country will be self-sufficient and will be saved from begging the enemy." The late Imam Khomeini continued by saying, "We saw that many factories and advanced tools like aircrafts and other industrialized goods, which were not thought to be started by Iranian specialists, and all hands were extended towards the West and the East so that their specialists would start them. As a result of the economic sanction and the imposed war, our dear young people have made the needed parts and supplied them in lower prices, and have proved that we can if we want to."
Good morning. morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.